Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Marcy Goldblum on behalf of the claimant, Jennifer Richards. Your Honors, in this case, the administrative law judge didn't follow the regulations in assessing the claimant's mental impairment. The regulations say that she needs to follow the what's set out or what's called the special technique. In 20 CFR section 404.15.20A, subparagraph D2, it says that if your medical impairment is severe, we will then decide if it meets or is equivalent in severity to a listed medical disorder. Now, I cite to that because defendant has said in their brief that it wasn't necessary for the administrative law judge to get any type of an opinion from any medical expert in this case with regard to the mental impairment.
But I want to stop you there because, you know, reading your brief initially, it made it sound as though there were no medical opinions out there. But actually, in the record, there are. I mean, she'd been seeing people over the years. That evidence comes in.
Not from the not consultants from the agency.
Well, that's right. But that's not the same thing as no medical evidence. We have doctors who had seen her over the years, and that, I believe, is what the administrative law judge is looking at to see whether there is enough in this record to compel going the next step.
No, there's a problem with that. Mental illness isn't uniform. It ebbs and it flows. What seems to have happened with this woman is that at some point she was abused as a child. She got involved with abusive men. She has four children. She's kind of got a chaotic lifestyle. She's involved with DHS, and she's put into she sees counselors.
But one of the other things about this case is it really seems to have evolved over time. She starts out applying for disability insurance benefits because she gets this retinal tear, which isn't mental illness at all. I mean, that's a physical problem. Obviously, it's a vision problem, whatever the severity may be. And then as time goes on, there's an amended application to include the mental problems. But in the meantime, as I understand the record, the children have now grown up. You know, she's got one of the daughters maybe living with her. Some of the stressors have changed in nature.
And she actually herself, and again, she is not necessarily the most articulate of individuals, but she explains that, you know, now that she doesn't have the kids and that's gone from her life, she has more time. I don't know if brood is the right thing, but now the past has come up to the present. Now all of the background of the abuse that she suffered is coming to the forefront. And, you know, in this Circuit's Wilder case, it made very clear that, you know, mental illness is a very peculiar animal, and that judges and lawyers were not the experts. And in this case, we have someone who, at the time of her hearing, the indication is that, you know, July of 2006, things are perhaps getting worse. And the hearing comes up, the hearing in front of the administrative law judge is July 2006. And actually, it's interesting because at the hearing, I think there's some recognition from the administrative law judge that perhaps there's the need for an expert, because she says on page 398, "I'm unable to bring in any medical expert at this point in time, so we're going to go forward with the hearing and proceed from there."
Well, isn't that because the mental issue was just raised at the last minute before the hearing?
Slightly before it, sure. But that doesn't, and again, this is an individual who wasn't represented by an attorney at the hearing.
Is there any, as Judge Wood was indicating, there's a lot in the record indicating that there's prior mental health treatment over the years. And if I recall correctly, aren't all the diagnoses in that of, in essence, mild anxiety and depression?
Well, they start out like that, certainly. But
is there something else?
We have a social worker who sees her more than anyone, who says that the combination of her depression and anxiety interfere with her ability to work. But we also have, in July of 2006, the treating psychiatrist at that time adds medication and also ups her dosage of the Lexapro. This is an individual who, and again, another reason why it's important that the ALJ, I think, called upon an expert, and she didn't. I mean, there were a lot of things that she had that she could have called upon. Obviously, because of the way things played out here, she couldn't have a medical expert at that hearing. But there were a lot of things she could have done. And she could have had a supplemental hearing. She could have sent interrogatories to the treating psychiatrist. She could have even sent interrogatories to one of the panel experts that routinely are called upon in these Social Security cases and could have said, you know, what's your opinion here? She could have even sent them a copy of the CD from the hearing so they could have heard the testimony.
But the fact that she's taking that the Lexapro dosage goes up isn't inconsistent with what the ALJ says, which is that the medical records reveal that her medications have been relatively effective for her. Certainly some of these depression is treatable, fortunately.
It can be, certainly.
Right, it can be. And so some people who are suffering from depression can at least get some level of functioning. We've got this evidence that her GAF score is in the functional range, if not great.
It's in 2005, it was, absolutely. And again, though, it's our...
And her date last insured is what?
I believe it's December of 2007.
That's why she really needs to make this record work for her, because even if she's sunk since then, her date last... Yeah, December 31, 2007 is what the ALJ says. She can't show a later onset.
No, not for the disability insurance benefits. Which is why in July of 2006, at the time where this is in front of Administrative Law Judge Brethauer, we have a combination of we have this woman who's got, she's noted to be morbidly obese with weights over 300 pounds down to a low of 270. The Social Security ruling notes that morbid obesity doesn't just have an impact on physical impairments, but it can have an effect on mental impairments. And some of the things that it notes are some of the things that are very consistent with what's going on in this case. For example, there's trouble sleeping. She's easily fatigued. She has generalized pain throughout her body. She also testifies to nightmares that are coming every day. She doesn't want to leave the house.
To what extent are the ALJ's credibility findings a problem for you?
Now, again, the defendant argues that they weren't properly, that credibility wasn't properly raised below. I think, though, that it was part and parcel of the whole thing. I think credibility is a huge problem here. I think that the ALJ, first of all, doesn't properly look at the activities. Now, we're not arguing that she shouldn't look at the activities. In fact, the administrative law judge absolutely needs to look at someone's daily activities, but they have to look at them as they're actually done. The administrative law judge can't just do a laundry list, checklist, and say, she does this, she does this, she does this, she does that, without explaining how she does it. For instance, she talks about the work as the part-time work in the bookstore. But one of the things she...
Stressful times when the students are all clamoring back for their...
Well, but what she doesn't also talk about is...
She says they're late. I remember from your brief.
Well,
she gets there late.
It's more than that. She says, sometimes I get nervous and I panic. So it's not that she's handling that situation during the stressful time well. She's having panic attacks sometimes. And the ALJ can't just look at what's she can't just give a blank canvas but not say how this is done. And finally, the ALJ says, at the end that she can do past jobs as both a customer service representative and a cashier. And at no time does she actually look at the specifics that are required from either of those jobs. That's legal error, and for all of those reasons, the case needs to be remanded.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Goldblum. Ms. Wang-Grimm.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Ms. Goldblum. I'm Jessie Wang-Grimm. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security. The ALJ here did her job. Having a well-developed record before her, Your Honors, consisting of medical reports, progress notes, treatment history, and the opinion of Ms. Richards' treating psychiatrist, Dr. Siamopoulos, the ALJ...
It does seem to me that the ALJ gives rather short shrift to the later amended claims about depression. Why, when you say she got an opinion from the treating psychiatrist, did she have a contemporaneous... July 2006 opinion?
Well, she has the range of treatment notes leading up to July 2006. And Dr. Siamopoulos notes that she's getting the proper medication. I think the social worker notes she's continuing to go to therapy. And Ms. Richards testifies at the hearing that the I can't remember which medication, but one of the mental health medications she's taking is helping her symptoms, making her calmer, and she also testifies that the counseling is helping her too.
So what concerns me, this is on page 6 of the ALJ's opinion, the ALJ refers to this June 27, 2006 letter from the social worker, which the ALJ properly notes is not a recognized medical treating source, but one, it's still a source she can look at. Opines that the depression and anxiety interfere with her ability to work. Then she says it's inconsistent with the old notes from a year ago with the mild depression. And then that paragraph ends with the statement, there is no opinion from the claimant's treating psychiatrist. Why, in terms of this special technique, wasn't the ALJ required to solicit that opinion?
Well, I think that the notes in that were before her were enough and fully developed to show that there wasn't a change in the very, very mild symptoms and limitations that Ms. Richards had. I mean,
but it's ambiguous. You know, what does interfere with her ability to work mean? Does it mean preclude, or does it mean it's harder but she can still do it, or does it mean, you know, it's got to be a low-stress job? Sometimes the vocational experts are given extra criteria to factor in. I mean, I'm not sure what that means or whether the ALJ really does have a full record.
I think the common sense application would mean that it's not a significant limitation. And the ALJ does give a non-complex.
Ms. Goldblum's version of common sense is different from yours. I mean, interfere with. She's reading that to mean preclude.
I don't think that the social worker's opinion brings in any detail to, or any limitations specifically that would arise from these impairments. And I think that the ALJ had a reasonable basis, therefore, to reject that opinion.
So you think somebody who's morbidly obese, who manages to squeak her way through a very abbreviated work schedule at a campus bookstore where her supervisor seems to allow her to take breaks whenever she needs to get come in late whenever she needs to kind of drift in and out of the workforce, or of the workday, how does that tell us that she can actually, because you've got to show she can perform 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week?
No, we don't have to show that. We simply need to show that she can perform substantial gainful activity. But
normally that means, can you hold down a full-time job?
But it doesn't always. And in this case, her past relevant work, which that's the stage we found in this case.
But here, we're not talking, even if we agree with you, it doesn't have to be 40 hours. We're talking 5 hours a week.
Well, and I think...
5 hours a week.
And I think
that's
Judge
my problem
right.
with it. She doesn't really make a distinction between the ability to work a few hours a week and being able to work full-time, or it being sustainable. I mean, that was not addressed. She just makes the conclusion she's capable of performing past relevant work as a customer service representative and cashier. I think we'd be very hard-pressed to find any employer that would let her do less than 5 hours a week, come late, take breaks, lay down, the way that she was performing here.
Well, I'll address very quickly the fact that, first of all, it's not clear, really, that she was only working 5 hours a week. I think her earnings records show a little bit different story, that she earned substantially more than what that's representing. But also, I wanted to point out that the work she previously performed, the part-time work that the ALJ takes into account, is part of a greater credibility analysis, that this is one of the activities that she could perform, and we're entitled to look at that as part of the greater analysis of whether or not of what she can do and what limitations she actually has. Are there any other questions Your Honors have at this point?
So how much did the employment record show in terms of the hours a week that she worked?
Well, for 2005, Judge Wood, she earned over $4,000 for what she claimed was supposedly a 2 to 3 week seasonal type of employment. But at $7.50 an hour, I think that's translating into a lot more work than 5 hours. And I think the ALJ noted that in the decision. As far as the obesity concern that was raised, I wanted to point out that none of the medical opinions reference obesity as a limiting factor for her. And I think the ALJ takes that into account. I mean, she says, okay, it's a severe impairment. I'll accept that. But when we go through the medical records, we're not seeing that a physician is saying that this obesity is causing significant limitation. So the ALJ takes into account appropriately. I also wanted to address Ms. Goldblum's point about the Step 4 finding and just remind the court that, yes, of course, the ALJ could have been a little bit more articulate in discussing the requirements of her past work, but there is a logical path here. We do have a vocational expert who has testified that he has reviewed the vocational records, the disability report in which Ms. Richards explained the jobs that she had previously performed and the requirements of those jobs. The ALJ can then rely upon the vocational expert's testimony as well as Ms. Richards' own testimony about her past work and all the requirements involved, so we can see a path of reasoning as to how we got to the conclusion that she could perform the past relevant work. I'll rest on our brief. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Your time ran out, Ms. Goldblum. If you want really 1 minute, we'll give you a minute.
Just very quickly, with regard to the past jobs, no questions were really asked specifically of what was required of either position. If you look at the testimony at the hearing, neither the judge nor the vocational expert asked any questions about that. Second of all, as the ALJ said, there was no opinion from the treating psychiatrist at that time. The opinion from the social worker seemed vague, yet even though there's no report from any other reviewing psychologist or psychiatrist, the ALJ didn't do anything to try to clarify that opinion. And finally, with regard to the obesity, what I think is very telling is I think the state agency reviewers limited her to sedentary work very likely because of the obesity. The ALJ in her decision obviously wasn't thinking about that because she says, accordingly, the undersigned must accept the limitations described by physicians employed by the state disability determination services who concluded that the claimant could perform light work activity, although I find no reason for even those limitations. So I think that this was not a judge who was considering the obesity. We ask that you remand this case. Thank you very much.
I just had a quick question.
Sure.
That discrepancy with the $4,000 statement.
You know, I looked at that myself, and I think the testimony was that it was seasonal. So, I mean, she was working a little bit in July. She was probably working a little bit in September. $4,000 if it was 7 or 8 hours some weeks. I can't tell you exactly how many hours she worked, and I don't think the record tells us that either.
It was two seasons.
I think when she says seasonal, it wasn't just 1 2- to 3-week period.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.